extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, David Goss. There's something about a Friday episode, boys. Something about, you know, like 5 hours of sleep, a little whiskey last night, just a wind down after El Trafico. Woo! First night of the conference semis. It was nice. It was special.
I was asked this week, are we doing a brown liquor special post MLS Cup to close out the season?
I don't know if it's
live.
I don't know if you would technically call it a brown liquor special. We have in the past done unofficial brown liquor specials where we've just had it in coffee cups. It didn't say anything, but we're going to be on the field at fill in the blank. We'll talk about that in a little bit. There's only five clubs that could host the MLS Cup. I don't think it would be a true BLS, because I would guess we won't actually be in possession of and or consuming brown liquor in that moment. Just as
talk
professionals.
Talk to me, Captain Morgan. Talk to me.
Just as professionals. Hit I'm just up. Throwing it out there. But maybe the day after. I think we do extra time the day after. Oh, so maybe that'll be like the... a little morning action, a little Bobby Warshaw, hair of the dog.
Was ETR. Oh, okay. We're talking about the MLS post-game show.
Gotcha.
I'm talking the squad.
My bad. We have done that before. Maybe we'll go with the hotel and do one of those. But look, we're on our way. November 5th is the MLS Cup final. We know two teams in the conference finals. It's the number one seeds. I'm happy to report that I was on that from the beginning, and that my bracket is absolutely destroyed. LAFC winners.
You're lucky
in
that
El Trafico.
I'm sick and I had to blow my nose, so I wasn't ready to jump all over you.
I saw you mute, and I was
I'll
like, "I gotta get
last
in."
Pick. I'm picking chaos in the bracket. LA Galaxy in the final. And quite honestly, the way the Galaxy have played, you were closer to being right than you were probably expecting to be.
Correct.
When you made your picks, which is the funniest part about the whole thing, is you accidentally made a decent soccer pick, and LAFC was just better.
Yeah, Cincy too. They almost got it done. They just lost by one goal, 1-0 in Chester. Who could have predicted Leon Flock? Nobody would have predicted Leon Flock. Who could have predicted that somebody would send us a haiku and it would be David and Skokie? I could have predicted that. David and Skokie summed up Thursday night. A great night of games. 8 down, 5 matches to come. David and Skokie. The third line is David and Skokie, which I really enjoyed from him. So coming up today from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, we are going to go through both of Thursday night's matches, El Trafico, and the burgeoning rivalry of brotherly love. It's workshopping that right now.
Are you going to write me a haiku now that my bracket's ahead of yours?
I will work on it. If we have an opportunity in this show for me to take a break, if you'd like to filibuster a little bit to give me some time, I will write you an apology haiku by the end of this show. That is my promise.
Charlie, why don't we do 20 minutes on your favorite start times for an MLS Cup final? Let's start at 9 a.m. and let's talk about the validity of each hour of the day.
Perfect. We probably won't get to a great starting point until probably 5 p.m.
Okay, that's fine. That means we've got 7 hours to talk about.
Good amount of time there. So we're going to get into it here. I'll do it. Don't worry about it.
You're fine.
Later in the show. Remember, Sunday night, the other two conference semifinals, Montreal NYCFC from Stade Saputo, 1 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, ESPN3. And then later in the day, Austin FC, FC Dallas, Copa Tejas, 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. Post-game show after those, interviews on site, all the highlights, all the analysis, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, at MLS on Twitter, MLS YouTube, etc. We talked about brackets, but I just want to establish that while mine is no longer perfect, and neither are yours, just, you know, we're all similar boats, if not necessarily the same boats.
God's working on all of us.
693 perfect brackets remain.
That's wild.
That's insane, Charlie.
Yeah, it's 600. Really not that crazy.
What?
It's really not that crazy.
Why?
Well, if you pick the favorites and then you throw in, sprinkle in, I don't think many people saw LA Galaxy losing to Nashville just because Nashville haven't been in good form. It wasn't the Nashville of old. Although I thought, they're going to do it to the Galaxy.
You picked Nashville. Yes.
I know. That's what I just said. But that's the only one.
Okay.
Unlike you, wanted to start.
Well,
next
Red
round.
Bull Cincy. Pop, pop, I mean, pop, pop, Red Bull pop, Cincy.
Everybody's going
like,
down.
I took some chances, man. Bravery, you know, doesn't always result in victory. Sometimes you just gotta, you know. Yeah.
But
yeah, run into
I think up until this point, I'm not surprised. It's the next round where I'd say, oh, okay. If there's over 100 perfect brackets at that point, I'd say, okay, I didn't expect that.
So here's the numbers of winners. So of the 693, 291 people picked LAFC to win. So not half, but probably in that 40% range. 226 picked the Union to win. So vast majority going top seeds. And I'll talk about that in a second because it's been a long time since both top seeds got to MLS Cup. Montreal, 58 brave souls, of which I used to be one, then my bracket imploded, picking Montreal to win it. 57 picking Austin, 35 picking FC Dallas, and only 26 of the remaining perfect brackets have NYCFC as the champions. Yeah. So, interesting stuff there. All right, let's get into it. David and Skokie, once again, with a haiku. Chicho, Buonga, make the difference in LA. No Bale, no problem. Gareth Bale not even on the bench for LAFC. Let's start with this, Charlie. What was the most El Tráfico moment that we got last night in a 3-2 victory for the black and gold? Chicho Arango is the hero laid on. Of course, Dejan Jovetic came in and was like, no, 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 no. We're not losing like this. We're losing a different way. Scored a banger of a goal. Did it Buonga. I mean, what we have a laundry list to choose from. What was the most El Tráfico moment for you?
For me, the most El Tráfico moment would be when Dennis Buonga, DP, who came in late, didn't really get that much. I don't think there was that much talked about in terms of like the hype and the anticipation, just because it flew under the radar. Everyone was focused on Gareth Bale. And here he is making his introduction to the El Tráfico rivalry, scoring a brace. I don't think anyone saw that coming, and him being the difference maker when you have Chicharito on the pitch and Carlos Vela, and you could even throw in some of the other players.
You want to say Douglas Costa? A little DP on DP crime on that first
goal. There you
go.
But that was kind of, I mean, he hasn't been at his best this year.
Sure, sure. But to see him get shivered in his own box, I mean, that was that was
a moment. I'm gonna go with Buonga as just the difference maker in El Tráfico.
He might end up being the guy that, one, scores the goal that gets them the shield, and then two, depending on how this goes, I mean, obviously was the difference maker in this game with two goals, helps LAFC to a double and the cup.
Did he get an assist on Arango's goal?
I don't think so, because it's a shot. Yeah, it's a shot. I'm going Ricky Puig, the orange card, which, Charlie, I know you believe strongly is a red card.
It is a red card.
I'm good with Alan Chapman goes yellow. I'm good with the yellow in this one, but that whole sequence early in the match of like this star that's been built up, this young guy, it's like his first big El Tráfico high leverage moment. He kind of flops, does flop, gets up. Jesus Maria winds him up real good, gets in his face. Then we have a possible headbutt. I'm willing to accede that there is a possibility that a headbutt occurred. I would call it more of a chest bump. But then the drama of will he, won't he? Are they going to send him off? Is Ricky Puig not going to play in the biggest match of the year for the Galaxy and for LAFC? No, Alan Chapman goes yellow. And just the fact that there was a question mark and then that the question mark was answered by a debatable call, that is El Tráfico. In a nutshell, Dave, what do you got?
The best goal scorer on the field for the Galaxy coming on in the 84th minute and then scoring on his first touch. After all of that, after Chicharito and Ricky Puig and Buonga and Vela and all the big names, it's the guy off the bench. He shouldn't be on the bench, but that's just the reality. And he comes in and scores the nicest goal of the game on his first touch. That, to me, was pure El Tráfico of like, okay, We've gone through traffic. Now we sort of know the route. Oh, construction. We're going this way now around.
Delay. And Carlos Vela being subbed off and doesn't apparently understand what it means to head coaches when he makes the, hey, I need a sub motion, which we'll get to in just a little bit. Moment of the night for me, and we do this on every show. It's maybe my most favorite part is the Chicho Arango glory tour for me. We talk about Dennis Buonga, but it's Chicho that gets the goal. I mean, this is the guy they were trying to, or at least reportedly, we're trying to ship in the middle of the season. He scores 16 goals in the regular season. He's sitting on the doorstep, finishes it off in 90+3 to win an El Tráfico playoff match. After that, Charlie, you're a master of celebrations. Did you ever find a wife or girlfriend in the crowd to smooch post goal. Was that ever accomplished?
It was a smooch, an air smooch.
Oh god, blown kiss,
but never,
not the real thing.
The real thing.
Not
did
the he real get a McCoy. Yellow card?
I don't think so, because he.
He left.
I guess
the field.
He technically left
he
the
was
field
standing
of
in
play.
Seats. But that's the trick at Bank of California. Yeah, look, there's no barrier between.
If Ricky Pooch is going to get a yellow, not a red, you can't be giving Chicho Arango a yellow for going up and finding his wife.
Andre says you can't
nice
yellow
kiss.
Card love, and I respect that.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's a good point. That's a good point. And then not only that, did you see the video after this match of Chicho Arango in the parking lot trying to leave? And is just mobbed by not just LAFC supporters, but LA Galaxy supporters as well, trying to get a picture with him. It's like he's in the car, the windows are down. You know, you see like, you kind of see this. I'm reminded of like the Arsenal players leaving and people wait on the street for him and then just mob the car for pictures. There are literally people surrounding his whole car. Everybody just trying to jam their head in the window with their phones, trying to get the right angle. A little star turn for Chicho Arango. He is loved in LA. What about you, Dave? What's the moment of the night on Thursday for you?
The goal scorer on the other side, Leon Flock, second goal in his career in Major League Soccer. And it's that standard 7-pass sequence. Yeah, all right, it's bouncing, so I'll just hit this outside of the left foot off the half volley and curl it into the upper corner. When he hits it and when I watch it, it's like, yeah, that's a good finish. Then you have to readjust when you realize it's Leon Flock. All right, if Carranza or Arango had hit that, you'd be like, and by the way, it was a really long match. Clearly, Megan hasn't been paying attention all season because it's like she just figured out who the Philly Union were. And 2 minutes in, she's like, who is that? She can't remember Julian Carranza's name. She thinks he's the best looking guy in MLS.
But she remembers his jawline. I'll tell you that.
She kept asking the entire night. We're watching LAFC. She goes, what's his name again? And I'm like, I'm not doing this. I'm not gonna facilitate this over and over again. He's a good looking man.
She just goes, gets a glass of red wine and just starts sipping it slowly.
A little Malbec. Yeah. Mm-mm. No, good looking guy. So I had to deal with that the whole game. But yeah, that goal, the sequence of play, it starts with McLean. They work it through the team. And then the finish from Flock, which is the way the play played out. Okay, makes sense. But again, he's never done that before. And you can see it in the reaction. The Philly Union players, like they won the World Cup off that one goal. Like, and Baezo's look is like, what just happened? So they're excited. Obviously, they've been waiting, not as long as in the past, but that bye, right? You watch a playoff game, you finally get home, it's under the lights, Jay Wright's making videos, your blood runs cold, there's a card stunt, it's everything you've wanted. They finally get the breakthrough, it's him, and you just see the reaction from his teammates and from the players, and that was the moment for me.
I love that he ran to Papa Jim.
Yeah.
Like went and got the big hug, got the bear hug from Jim Curtin. That was an awesome moment. And I thought Jillian Sakovic's interview with him after the game, check it out, MLSsoccer.com. It's also on the postgame show, was really special. I just smiled through the whole thing. Leon being like, look, I told my dad maybe I'm saving my goals for the playoffs. He only has 1 and 2 years in MLS. That was last year, like against the Crew in like the 89th minute. It was a deflected half volley. I mean, it was a nice goal, but it was not this goal. Charlie, I'm curious because it like reminds me of those moments a little bit, and it's not an exact analogy here, but like when you see in college basketball when the bench warmer hits the three late on and the whole bench is going crazy. Like, you know, Leon Flock's a starter, don't get me wrong, but nobody's expecting him to pull up and finish and score and win a playoff game. What's that feeling like on a team where it's like, okay, you're the striker, Charlie. Everybody expects this from you. Like when you score goals, you got your celebration ready. They're excited. But it's like, yeah, that's what Charlie does. But when the guy who's not supposed to score scores. Yeah.
When Jeff Larenowitz puts one in the corner.
That's arguably a better
feeling. Andy Dorman places one in the top.
Come on, Dorman scored a good number.
That's a good one.
When Adam Christman.
When Michael Parkhurst.
You are elated for that teammate. I've been in situations where you're chasing a goal or it's the game's tied. There's a lot of pressure, and you know a perfect example would be Scott Caldwell when he would score a goal and when I was playing with the Revolution. Not typically going to be one that's in front of the goal, getting his head on to things or taking shots, but. When a player like that scores and it's a big goal and a big moment, you can't feel any other emotion than happiness and joy and like love for that player because of how hard they work, and they always do the dirty work, and now they're getting their chance to be celebrated and piled on and jumped on. And those were magical moments, because you know how they just don't know how to react. You know, typically they just run around looking, they're like, do I celebrate? Do I just get tackled? You know, this is so cool. So it's nice to see. I mean, Andrew Farrell, I think, has scored, you know, just 2 goals in his career or something like that. And, you know, you see some of these players score for the first time, man, I just get that happiness feeling when I think about it.
Welcome to the club, buddy. Welcome to the club. Let me bring you aside.
You
bring
did you into my it.
All right. Let's. You got a moment, Charlie? What's your moment? Was it Dennis Bawanga or was it something different?
I would say it's Andre Blake.
Mm.
Andre Blake for me has solidified himself on the Mount Rushmores of goalkeepers in Major League Soccer. He's always been one that has been able to pull out that incredible save, the one that you can't see anyone else making. But then he'd have those little errors or you know, those the goals that he has given up in the past that maybe aren't that spectacular. And you're thinking, how can you go from one peak of goalkeeping to another one where you can't be consistent or relied on? And I think he's grown so much of just being consistent and now being a leader. A vocal leader, one that's leading by example, but also one that's not afraid to speak his mind and, you know, prevent players from getting yellow cards and talking to the referee. And he's just developed into this absolute monster of a goalkeeper in all facets of the game. So for me, that's the moment that stuck out to me of just Andre Blake is here and he's that guy.
That save, the drop down on Brandon Vasquez, absolutely huge. I think sort of what you're saying, like, when you expect that from a goalkeeper and it's not a surprise and it's not sort of like, hey, put it on a pedestal. It's just like, that's what Andre does. That's where you've sort of entered a different echelon. And we'll talk more about whether he's the best in MLS history, because he is the only MLS goalkeeper with 3 All-State Goalkeeper of the Year awards. He was awarded with that this week. And by the way, Jakob Glesnes is the Defender of the Year as well. All right, let's get into the MLS Cup hosting scenarios. 6 teams left. Sorry to FC Dallas and all you Giant Taco aficionados out there. Cannot go to Frisco for MLS Cup. It is not possible. One of New York City, Montreal, or Philly has to get to MLS Cup, and all those teams finished higher than FC Dallas in the Supporters Shield standings. Therefore, we will not be going to Frisco, so mark that one off the list. I do think it's cool, though, that 1 through 5 in the Shield standings from this year are still alive, and Dallas was 7th, but they were tied with the Red Bulls on points. It was just a tiebreaker difference on 53 points. Red Bulls had an additional win. So I think it's very cool that the cream is clearly rising to the top. I mean, last year, awesome MLS Cup, don't get me wrong, but you know, having 2-4 seeds, it was sort of like, oh, would you have liked to see the best teams continue? You know, maybe so, just to see the regular season translate to the postseason. We've got that this year. So Dallas can't host. Austin can only host. Only one scenario to go to Q2. That is if NYCFC make MLS Cup, because NYCFC are 5th in the Shield standings. Austin are 4th. NYCFC can only host if Dallas make MLS Cup. They can't host it, but of course they could still get there. So if Dallas make MLS Cup, NYCFC could host. That's their only scenario. And then, of course, Philly and Montreal can only host if LAFC are eliminated. They will host any Western Conference team. That would be Austin and Dallas at this point if they get there. And LAFC
I wish and hope that if New York City FC ended up hosting MLS Cup in some crazy scenario, that they would get to play at Giant Stadium.
I thought you were going to go super trolly and say Red Bull Arena.
No, you want to sell it out?
Yeah, I want this to be a massive
fun
New York fixture just before the World Cup. Here we go, New York City FC. That'd be something special.
What if LAFC make it to the final and the bank is going to be sold out? It was absolutely jumping last night. I think the like pregame 3252 with all the flags and everything, just the regalia, all the noise was like, it just jumped off the screen. I can't even imagine what it's like to be there. What if LAFC gets there and they go to SoFi?
No, they have a stadium. They own a stadium that they built. That's not how that works.
And they couldn't possibly play probably on that weekend just because, you have the Giants and the Jets. it's a Sunday. Maybe it's a
Saturday MLS Cup.
It's a Saturday. Yeah, they could. Yeah. It's a bye week for the Giants.
I think the team
you
that are left...
familiar with the NFL schedule, buddy. You are locked in on that. Whoa.
I think my guess would be the teams that own stadiums they play in will probably play in the stadiums they own.
Yeah, that's a good guess.
That's just me throwing.
Yeah,
out
there. I think. Yeah, good. I think.
Want to write a haiku when I'm right?
Yeah, for sure. Oh, good reminder on the haiku. Gotta get that done. Gotta give you guys some room to breathe here. So here's a question from Morgan Tenza before we go deep into these games.
Shout out, Morgs.
Yeah, question for you lot. We're called a lot. When was the last time the top two number one seeds played each other in the MLS Cup final? I went and did the research. Mm-hmm. It has been almost 20 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So don't look at the rundown. Have you looked at the rundown? Have you cheated?
So, no. LA Galaxy not. Revs.
That is the second most recent. That was 2002 Galaxy Revs. Galaxy was the number one seed in the West and the number one seed overall, like best record in the regular
Houston
season.
Houston Dynamo, New England Revolution.
No. False. But the Revs that year were technically fifth overall in the standings, but they were top in the East. It was a different era. There weren't that many teams.
Yeah.
So what's 2003 final off the top of your head? Do you remember that one? That was the last one.
Is it San Jose?
San Jose was the number two seed.
Yeah.
No, number one seed is,
was it DC?
It was not DC, but we'll get to DC in a second.
Kansas City?
Nope, Kansas City is involved as well, but this team played Kansas City in 2000, which was another 1-2 matchup.
Is it? Wasn't it Miami?
Yeah, 2000 was
Miami. Fusion. But they weren't in the league in 2003.
No.
Chicago Fire. Chicago Fire. In 2000, it was Wizards.
I don't understand. Fire. Why do you keep saying two seeds?
One and two seed, like the true, I guess I'm talking Supporters Shield in my mind, but it's the one seeds in both conferences.
I didn't understand what you were even saying.
Yeah, now everybody's confused. So. Yeah. Anyway, 2000, same case, Wizards Fire, 1999, DCLA, also the same case.
Okay.
So here's another little quiz for you as we go into El Tráfico. Seven teams have won the Shield Cup double. Can you name them? LAFC would like to become the eighth.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto?
For sure.
What year Toronto? This. Just
2017
okay,
Toronto.
We got one. Yep.
LA
one.
Galaxy.
What year?
2012.
2013. 2011.
2011. Whatever. It's the same team.
Yeah.
I scored against them that year.
definitely the Wizards 2000, right?
Yes, that's correct. That's 3 of 7. Well done.
Okay. I'm going to go DC United 2004.
No.
Five.
But, no. But there are two DC teams.
98.
Split the difference. You're like in the middle. You're 99, and then you're in the middle of the sandwich. So 97
Chicago
is the
2000.
Other. Nope.
Gosh, I knew.
Really?
No. Who won in 2000? It was not Chicago.
Right. Yeah.
You said Kansas City already.
Yeah. Chicago 01.
Nope.
Or 02. Okay. Well.
2002 and 2008. Just to speed the process.
So LA Galaxy in 2002.
Correct.
Chicago was a double in 08.
No, Chicago didn't win anything in
08. Oh, got it. Okay, I got confused. Oh, Columbus 08.
Yes, there we go. We have them all now. Yep, okay. We have them all. All right, let's. That was quick. Yeah, let's dive into El Tráfico.
I was ready for that one. I was not ready.
Yeah, ready-ish. Seeding
is not a thing I value.
El Tráfico delivers again. Is this the best rivalry in MLS right now, Charlie?
It is. It is.
Why?
Right now the best. Well, if I'm looking at the other two rivalries that are really competitive at the moment, it's Portland and Seattle, and that's more so the fan base at this point than
and
the
history.
Teams.
The history as well.
Okay, in the history. Exactly. And then Red Bulls, New York City FC, that just Red Bulls, the way they play, just not, it's not it right now. That there's nothing that screams to me about culture and history, and it's just not a strong rivalry right now, because I think the Red Bulls just don't have that quality that makes it a strong rivalry, because New York City FC have really brought it for a while now.
I will say it's the best game in MLS. When the two match up, it has been off the charts every time. For the rivalry, because of the lack of quality from the Galaxy now, the entire existence of LAFC, and I think it's changed, it is still Portland-Seattle. Even though both teams aren't in the playoffs, Seattle won CCL. The two have been in MLS Cup every year since LAFC came in to MLS. Wait. So that rivalry in terms of what is between them, right? Like Portland and Seattle fans are rooting against each other all playoffs every year. So, but when they get on the field together, their games are not as entertaining as the Galaxy and LAFC.
Right. I don't know if we're, are we talking about just in history? Or I don't know. Right now, just, currently with
I just players? Did a weavy thing and said whatever I wanted.
Correct.
I will throw this out there.
Okay.
I am throw it very out there. Excited to see what Sunday looks like in Texas because it's only been 2 years. And I think what Austin has done to Dallas is similar to what LAFC has done to the Galaxy, which is like, we are in MLS 4.0. You can wake up and be with us, or you can continue to sit. Dallas has made the strides. They've brought in more experienced players. They've leaned on veterans while still selling and brought in a Velasco. They're selling out the stadium. They redid the stadium. Like, a lot of good has gone into Dallas. I think that could be pretty special going forward.
There's also a really good moment earlier this year. I don't, you guys remember it. Maybe the people at home sort of forgot about it, where Austin had to celebrate their Copa Tejas regular season, like the cup win, in the parking lot in Frisco. Like, and then they were all hacked off. We didn't get to celebrate on the field. They had to wait till afterwards, and they had this big party, and they had the drums, and it was awesome. But like, those are the sort of moments and a little bit of pettiness on both sides, by the way. Austin complaining about it, and I don't even think Dallas had anything to do with that. I think that was just Austin trying to create some motivation where there maybe wasn't
although
a ton.
Although the Dallas fans are upset right now.
Me. Yeah, they are, because they don't get to bring their drums. Yeah. Which I'm not for that. Those drums should be there.
Yeah, I will add, I think there's going to be a lot of locals in this, right? Like, these are two teams that should have academies with kids who are from that area, which should add even more. They'll be competing over players. Like, that should take it to the next level of having Dallas locals go up against Austin natives.
Dave, is it just me, and to turn it back to El Trafico, LAFC wasn't their best performance?
Yeah, I would say it was similar to Philly. And while I thought the bye week sort of recorrected because it was less of a layoff, there was still rust for both teams to start. And as Kalen has said over and over, the team coming out of a playoff game, they have that energy. They're playing at a playoff level. They're sharp. And the other team sort of has to get there. And I would throw on, that's the way LAFC finished the season. I thought Chirundolo was right coming out of halftime. They didn't make the Galaxy feel them. It wasn't, okay, what's your point of confrontation? Where's the high line? It was every time a Galaxy player touched the ball, they had time to turn. And LAFC wasn't in them, and they weren't aggressive. And I thought that all shifted as it went along. But they're good enough to be able to be tied 1-1, potentially should have been ahead at halftime after all that happens. And I think that's where you look at this team and you say, they're special. The center backs with Segura back, I think, are good enough to keep most of the game in front of them. Ilya Sanchez is healthy, and then Vela is Vela. And so it felt like that first half was sort of like, this is why LAFC could win MLS Cup, because when they play like this, they can still beat a really good team in MLS.
Thoughts, Charlie? I mean, I thought Greg Vanney at halftime, like, we're talking about El Trafico moments. That is actually one of my favorite moments of the match, of him coming out at half and be like, hey, don't got us.
Yeah,
like,
we're good.
We're handling this business. Like, yeah. We're good. Yeah.
I think LAFC, they played a little bit. To me, it seemed like they were a little bit nervous in this one. They weren't playing as aggressive as we would expect them to play at home. It was almost like they were inviting LA to come into their own half and look to counter and trying to create space in behind. But with Ricky Puig there, he was just connecting passes. They weren't rushed. So it was almost they allowed them to get into a rhythm and allowed them to kind of dictate the tempo, which was a little bit of a shock. In the second half, they made those adjustments, and I thought the second half was a lot better from LAFC in terms of not allowing LA Galaxy to just keep the ball and move it side to side and try and overload, find an overload to basically find that advantage.
Were you surprised that Giorgio Chiellini did not start for LAFC?
No. What did I say from the very beginning? There were some LAFC people chirping, oh, this guy thinks that Chiellini's not going to come in here and dominate and be the best center back in the league. Look at all the experience. No, it's just not possible. The guy's had so many injuries. He's at the end of his career. He's coming to a super physical league where he's never had to travel and deal with time changes and climate changes throughout a season. It was a lot. And all of a sudden he comes And there was that period where he comes in with all the experience and the hype and the energy, and guys are loving him, and he's a great and he's awesome in the locker room from what I hear. He's awesome around the teammates and in practice and wants to be involved. Coaching is obviously the path he wants to go down. But in terms of performance where you can rely on him for 90 minutes, that was never going to happen. Never. And I loved him coming in. And I always said, never sign him for a DP or any type or anything in that range. But if he wants to come and play and more so be a coach and help the player, the center, young center backs, I mean, Mamadou Fall would have been a perfect example of someone who he's trying to groom and walk through, you know, do those walkthroughs during practice and really, you know, work on him with him one-on-one until he makes that move to Villarreal. Then you're just seeing, looking at Chiellini like, hey, how's it going? Like, what's up? Another espresso. But Chiellini is an awesome player, has a load of experience, but was never going to be somebody who was going to be considered as a starter for this team throughout the season. And especially, I think, in the playoffs, we saw he just can't move side to side. He's not quick enough. The team can get severely exposed, I think, with him playing. Unless they're going to just sit in a deep line, then, you know, similar to the U.S. men's national team, you can't play a high line or be aggressive if you have certain players playing along that back line. And it's the same thing for LAFC.
Listen, the postmortem on this season is going to be fascinating. The first person of like, was Mamadou Fall already at Villarreal? Were they worried about Segura's injury? Was that what it was? Was it just what Charlie said to bring experience in because he wants to come and let him sit off on the bench? Did the Fall thing come after? Like, we don't really know all the full conversations around that. I don't believe that he wasn't brought in with the idea that he could start in the playoffs. I don't think it was, yeah, there's no chance. It's just this is what he is. I think they wanted to work him in. I also wonder how much they were worried about what Segura would be. And now they've seen the level he's at. And he's always the option if he's there, but he's coming off an ACL surgery and you don't know what it looks like. So you bring in a short-term guy like Chiellini who could do it if you had to. And then Segura ends up being healthy. And so that's the one you stick with. I'm not sure about any of that. Again, this is the quality of this team that they can have these things. And it doesn't matter. I mean, Franco Escobar, no one's even talking about the fact that they're starting right back. Kim Moon-Won, they sold. And then Franco Escobar just has been unavailable because of injury. And they can start Ryan Hollingshead, who I thought was the player of the year last year for Dallas, at right back. And they've played him at left back. That's sort of the depth of this team. And that's the quality of this squad.
I mean, we're talking about this. We haven't even hit Gareth Bale really in depth. He's not on the bench. He's not available. Quote unquote, ready to go for the Western Conference final, says Steve Trundolo. I will believe that when I see it. I do not believe that, Steve. I do not trust you in that sense. Does anybody remember? We did an over-under on Bale goal involvements, I want to say. Yeah. Was it goals or just goal involvements? Maybe Anders remembers?
I was way off.
We did one.
I think it was like 11 and a half goal involvements. Yeah,
I think we did
like
one
that
on starts as well, and I went super low. I think I set the line really low, and all of you went over. Low. And I may have had that line
lost.
Correct.
Boy, we were drinking the Welsh Kool-Aid, weren't we?
Super low, and you still lost. Like, no one thought he'd come and play in 12 matches and only start two of them. There is not a single person.
I think I set the line at 2.5
on starts.
I think it was like 4 or 5.
I don't know. Our memories aren't good enough to. I think this is all selective memory
Anders,
here. It's like I'm
Anders
sure that I said it at 2.5. Yeah, Anders got to dig back while we debate this. But Gareth Bale, I don't think he's going to be involved in this postseason. And the crazy thing is, despite all of our hype and look, did we build him up too much? Yes. In hindsight, clearly we did. But even without Gareth Bale, it doesn't really matter. They're still the favorites. That speaks to this project. That speaks to what they've built overall.
Denny Bawanga.
Denny Bawanga goes under the radar, but he's the long-term guy. Like, if you look at his underlying numbers, they're unbelievable. He's dominant. The quote, I think, from Toronto on him was, he's physically and mentally a monster. This team they're stacked.
Stacked.
They're absolutely stacked.
And they'll continue to be stacked because when Gareth Bale's contract does end, and whether he prolongs it or not, from what I understand, he loves it. Probably moving towards prolonging it. That in my mind and in LAFC's mind. I don't know if that's a good
thing for LAFC.
Carlos Vela, I think when that contract ends, he's probably going elsewhere. Who can't they recruit? Anybody who's interested in Major League Soccer coming to America, any big star, it's easy money. I mean, Bruce Arena always talks about, I had to bat people away because everyone wants to come to LA when you think of Major League Soccer because of the bright lights, the great weather. It's just, that's how Europeans think. You know, wow, if I'm going to Major League Soccer, but I throw in the big but, other clubs have now been able to shine and show that it's not about LA or New York or Miami. That if you come to Columbus Crew, Schelotto, being able to choose that kind of flew under the radar, then that club has taken off and their new stadium, Cincinnati's new stadium, Austin. Now you can go to all these different places in soccer and say,
send Gareth Bale to Cincinnati, Charlie. He needs a Sky Rosa. He needs a piece of pizza with a coney on top of it.
Well, he's a little bit different. I'd say you can't go from Real Madrid to Cincinnati.
That's pretty landlocked.
But you can go Schalke. You can go Schalke to Cincinnati.
You can.
That doesn't mean you like Skyline, but what is it? What was his name?
Is this a Jurgen Locadia joke?
It's a Jurgen Locadia joke.
Cool. Yeah.
It was. By the way, Anders dug up our over-unders. Games played, over-under 12.5. So that was a pretty good line, given that he played 12. I think game started 12. It was a game started as well. We put it at 12.5. That can't be right.
This is not my Chiellini line. This is the Bale one.
Yeah. And then goals 7.5 and assists 11.5. This is from the rundown that we put together. I'm guessing we changed it on the show because those are absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
In retrospect.
I will just say, I think a lot of people in the world have Wales going through at the group stage of the World Cup, and he is the entire reason. Like, we didn't overrate this. This is who Gareth Bale is. It failed for him, but it didn't for LAFC because that's why they could take the risk with him and Chiellini. They have enough of a club put together. For the future, I don't know. I went through it last night. I said LA Galaxy are already my 2023 Supporters Shield favorites.
I saw that.
I think Cifuentes is gone for sure. I don't know what Kellen Acosta is going to do. I think Diego Palacios is probably gone, as well as some of these side pieces that now have come on where, okay, what's Chiellini's future? What's Bale's future? Blah, 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 stuff like that. And I also think you could say that about a bunch of the other teams at the top, right? Kai Wagner's gone. That seems to be pretty obvious. Some other pieces in Philly maybe as well. Montreal's already sold Georgie. We've heard the comments from Wanyama. So that's where I came from with that. And obviously, I don't know what rosters will look like. And honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if Ricky Puig got sold this offseason. He came out of Barcelona and he was a complete unknown. Everyone knew the quality. No one knew if he was a productive player, if he could train well, if he could play week after week.
Signed?
Listen, the Galaxy paid very little for him, if anything. I don't even remember that part of it.
He's not going anywhere.
And if someone comes in and says, you know what? We were going to offer Barca $6.5-7 million, but we didn't know. Now you know. So I wouldn't be shocked if he was gone.
3 years remaining on the contract.
If he's gone,
yeah,
I wouldn't be shocked if someone came and said, "Hey, we'd love to get signed Ricky Puig."
Yeah,
but you're going to tell me the Galaxy would let that prize asset go, knowing that you can't find those players. Those players don't just fall onto your lap and then you say, "No, I'm going to sell them for $10 million." What is that? If you said 25, 30, 35 million, then you'd say, "Go ahead, we'll reinvest." But I think for the amount of money that they would receive for Ricky Puig right now versus what he could do for the club moving forward and getting back to winning trophies and silverware, you're not moving off of that.
That's, I don't disagree with you, but I'd say the Revs had a shot at MLS Cup if they didn't sell Buxa and Tejan Buchanan, and they did. That's part of what these clubs are. That's what they do. Charlie, I know you're going to do Champions League next week, so I'll get you warmed up here. Mate, when the head's been turned by a big club in a big league, the top five league I'm talking about, a big club, sometimes there's nothing you can do with the player. The player has to go.
Between that and Charlie's Jamaican, I'm going to give the edge to Charlie's Jamaican all day, every day. That was a good attempt. That was better than Bobby Warshaw.
Thank you.
So I'll give you that. By the way, here's a good note from this El Tráfico from the LAFC perspective. We'll talk about them more, of course, leading into the conference finals. Kellen Acosta, awesome gesture ahead of tonight's game, according to Gio Garcia, hosts a great podcast about LAFC and the Galaxy. Apparently, Kellen bought tickets for the entire back office staff of LAFC at the training facility, kitchen folks, janitors, etc., all the people that sort of are in the back making things tick. I thought that was a really cool gesture from Kellen Acosta. So
top man from Kellen.
Good stuff there. All right. We talked a little bit about Galaxy postmortem. You talked about Puig there. And the Supporters Shield prediction I didn't hear, but I'm intrigued by. Mm-hmm. Chicharito obviously back. He had the option triggered by his goal-scoring form. Puig is going to be back unless they sell him. 3 more years on that deal. I cannot see them selling him. I'm with Charlie on that. Because they have to show their fans that they're serious. This is like the first time back in the postseason in a long time. Like, if they want to be the Galaxy again, they need Ricky Puig, 100%. Here's what Greg Vanney had to say. Ultimately, I think 2022 was a big step forward. We've been trying to rebuild the team over the past couple years, and I think we've taken big steps forward over the past couple years to rebuild the group. I think we've created a vision now of how we want to play. It's exciting, attacking soccer, and we want to have a lot of the ball, and we want to have a group that's connected and believes that it can win championships, and we can get the club back on top. Now, if you're talking about the Galaxy, Julian Araujo is one that I could see moving on. Efra Alvarez is another that I could see potentially moving on. You'd think probably Liga MX for him. If that was the case, though, he has said, both of them, I think, that they'd like to be in Europe. What's sort of the transfer window focus, Dave, because you've made the Shield call?
I actually think Julian going could be a good thing for the Galaxy. One, you need to start showing you can sell players because all the players who have come out of the Galaxy Academy have left on their own. But two, I actually think it could balance your field a little bit where you get more of a two-way right back, someone with more defensive chops, and that allows you to sort of unleash Edwards. It makes you a little more predictable, but fine. Turn Raheem Edwards into attacking left back like what Philly does with Wagner, and then you have something safer on the right side. You need to find goal production outside of Chicharito and Ricky Puig. So it's Cabral, it's Grandsier, and it's Costa right now alongside Jovalich. Obviously, Jovalich will be back. I assume he wants to be a starter. You can find a way to create the diamond. I think Delgado fits into it well. But that's where this team needs to grow. And then, of course, center back. Casares showed when he came in more mobility there, a little bit more experience. It took the team to another level. I think most of that came from Brugman and Puig, where the team had cover and controlled the game. They lose the ball in better spots. They control the flow of the game. They're able to take risks when they want to and not when the game's open. But they need a high-level center back. I think probably only one at this point. It doesn't need to be a complete overhaul. There's probably enough there, especially if Casares comes back between the other guys. But they need that. They probably need to replace fullback. And then they need to find something in the attack. They've got Cabral and Costa under contract, I believe. So if they want to buy one of them out, they can. And they've shown in the past they're willing to. They did it with Giovanni Dos Santos. I mean, if you had a legitimate attacker alongside those guys, even like when you talk about Galaxy history, Mike McGee and Steven Ishizaki level, it doesn't have to be Thiago Almada. It doesn't have to be the best player in the league because Puig is the face of your team. And Chicharito, when he's not the face of your team, I think is fine. Right? 18 goals, finishes in the box. You just can't build the team around him and make him carry things. You just need something from someone else when the game is focused on those other two.
All right. Galaxy done. They're out. On to the offseason for them, but Austin FC and FC Dallas still have life. 8 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. ESPN Deportes. Copa Tejas in the playoffs. It's going to be fun. Brad Stuver said, these are the games that make rivalries explode. Love it. Hope it explodes. Looking for maximum entertainment, Charlie. We don't really know the status of Paul Areola and Paxton Pomykal. I'm basically going to assume right now that they're fine, that they'll be good to play.
It sounds like Areola was cramping, so he's fine.
Yeah, and then Pomykal, that's a halftime sub, and we know his history, so that one's a little bit more concerning. Mm-hmm. TBD on that. What do you want to see from Dallas in this one, and how does Austin avoid the, oh, crap, we're down 2-0 in 15 minutes habit that they have?
Well, I mean, from the first game when Dallas played Minnesota, Jesus Ferreira came back too deep. He was playing in the midfield for most of the game. He wasn't making deep runs in behind. He wasn't you know, playing off the defender's shoulders. There was no holdup play. It was all checking deep, you know, trying to connect passes. And that's not what FC Dallas needed. They need someone to stretch the field. He needs to be the nine. So in this match, I'd like to see him play higher up the field. And Brendan Cervenia came in and he added to this group. I mean, just his energy levels, his commitment. If Paxton could not go due to injury, I think Cervenia is ready for the challenge. I think he's a player that can, he could add something to this group in terms of shots from distance, creating, winning second balls. He's good. He's pretty good midfielder from box to box from that position. So I wouldn't be too worried if I was FC Dallas. And then from Austin, they just had a slow start. Just same thing with RSL, allowing RSL to score two goals. It was almost like they were not really engaged yet. I mean, it took them almost a half to wake up. I'd say a good 30 minutes until they started putting pressure on RSL and trying to close them down. But they were sitting back too deep. They weren't touch tight. And I think for this first half, you have to be right on FC Dallas. Don't allow them to play the balls in the channel. Don't allow them to build confidence and get on the ball. Paul Arriola is very predictable, but he does it super well. So you know how it's coming. Don't allow that service to get to Arriola into the channels. Force them to play short. Force him to check deep. Don't allow him to continue to get in behind that left back. So this will be an interesting game. I'm pumped to see. You know, I love these rivalries, and Q2 has been rocking. So the atmosphere is going to be epic.
All right. LAFC maybe don't want Austin. I don't know. Tough to beat a team three times, but Austin 1-2-1 at the bank this year. 4-1 at Q2. Dallas 3-1 win for LAFC at the bank. So they beat Dallas and they lost at Toyota. What's your prediction, Dave?
I think it's a toss-up. I think both teams struggled with the same thing in game one. I think both teams were overwhelmingly better than their opponent and home, but neither of them was ready at the start. And neither of them played loose. They both played scared to lose rather than out there to take the game and win. And so it's whoever's going to adjust to that better. I think there's a good shot it's Dallas because they're playing with house money at this point. It's year one of this rebuild. They're on the road. There's not much expectations. I also think Velasco was just bad because he hasn't played in 6 weeks. And I thought that affected Jesus Ferreira. And I thought Ferreira was bad as well. So if those two can play anywhere near their level, it's already a step forward for FC Dallas. And that's who I picked coming into this. And I don't have any reason not to anymore because I thought they both struggled in the same way. But you can see the playbook for Austin, right? Especially when you talk about what Diego Fagundes has done this year, the struggles that Dallas has defensively, whether it's Nanu or Imatunwasi from the right back position, the work Quiñones probably going to have to do, maybe Cerillo. There's going to be openings in this game to create. And so if Austin comes out and, as Charlie said, they play the way they can play right from the start, they can probably do enough to get ahead. And then Dallas will probably struggle to chase. But at the same time, I think Dallas knows the test. They went to Austin. They went ahead 2-0 in their previous matchup. They've scored big goals on the road. I think they've played really well on the road throughout this season. So it really is 50-50 to me, but I picked Dallas coming into it. I have no reason to go away from that pick.
I'm going Austin, and just that's basically like a Diego Fagundes, Sebastian Driussi combo / just like the culture that Austin has, which is they can go down and it doesn't seem to bother them because they've done it before. So like, I don't think they're a team. I don't see FC Dallas being a team that can bury them. And if you can't bury Austin, they've always got a chance. And if they have, in my opinion, right now on form at least, you could argue Arriola or Ferreira over Fagundes. But Driussi is the best individual player in this game.
Yes.
And time and time and time and time again, all season long, when they've needed a moment, Driussi has provided the moment. I think that when this game demands a moment, it will be Driussi that provides it. I can't see Dallas being in a place where they can push Austin out of the game, and I think that crowd is going to just be absolutely rabid.
Here's the thing about Driussi so we put him in the conversation as a 10, but he's a forward.
Yeah, he's more of a second forward.
He's closer to Hani Mukhtar than he is to Reynoso.
Correct.
And when you watch the RSL game, this team lost control of what they wanted to do, and there is no one on the field a la Nico Ladero, Reynoso, Zelarayán, who could take the ball and say, I'm going to calm us down. I'm going to change the point of attack. I'm going to get us playing. Alex Ring didn't do it in that game. Pereira doesn't. I think Pereira starting this game will put Austin back into their comfort zone because he drives that guys, but they hit 60 crosses. Me and Doyle talked about it in the last game. There is no one in this team who takes the ball high usage and gets them back into what they want to do outside of just Josh Wolf directing them. And that was worrying, I think, about the last game. It's not going to change because Drewsy is not that player. And it's just one of those things that Austin has to figure out how they're going to do that in big moments.
I think it might change a little bit because like RSL got up and then the game state changed and they weren't pushing numbers forward. They went to 10 men and they were like, all right, cool. We're going to straight bunker this thing. And so then you understand where that cross heavy approach comes from because it's like, okay, well, how are we going to
play? But not for them. That's the thing. For every team in the league, yes. When you look at the numbers, MLS sits here. Austin sits
for sure.
40 yards to the right.
If there was a moment to have a learning experience and like something for Josh Wolf to put on screen on tape and say, don't do this again, that was it.
Yeah. You just have to see them change it. That's the thing. If they go behind against Dallas, the question is, will they change that?
Yeah, I think Dallas is going to want so much more of the ball than RSL ever wanted. I'm just trying to get a bracket pick right here. I'm desperate. You know, it's a little bit of
yours is already done. You're washed.
No, Montreal could win this thing, Charlie. I have a differentiator. Okay, 8 p.m. Okay. Eastern Sunday, Copa Tejas, Austin, Dallas. All right, let's talk Union. We've wasted too much time, and I'm sure that Philly fans are furious with us right now. But look, we delayed El Tráfico last show, so that was correct and just. Union are back to the conference finals, Charlie. 2 years in a row. As Dave said, electric in Chester. You know, Jay Wright can't beat KU in the Final Four, but he can do pump-up videos. So congratulations to him. Did enjoy him wearing a suit in that one as well. Was juiced by that pregame pump-up video from the Union. Cincinnati challenged them in this game. This was not a game for the faint of heart. It was extremely physical, not a ton of big scoring opportunities, a lot of fouls. It was choppy. The rhythm of the game was not what I had hoped and expected, which would a little bit more open, a little bit more free-flowing. But Andre Blake, but Leon Flock. But that's it for Cincy. What did this win say to you about the Union?
They're willing to grind. And they can, you know, figure out a way to win when it wasn't as an open game as they were probably expecting or hoping for. Definitely throughout the course of the 90 minutes. This seemed like a rivalry. This you would have thought this was a LA type scenario because of how chippy it got. I mean, Matt Miazga, Jose Martinez. There's a lot of characters between these two teams in terms of like real tough.
Like the smoke. Like, guys who like the smoke.
The guys who like the smoke, which I fed off. I fed off of those kind of guys. But I will say,
I think you might have been one of those guys.
No, I wasn't. I was definitely not one of those guys.
Oh, okay.
But
I was definitely not.
But if those guys got in my face, then that was going to show them.
Oh, yeah. Then I was going to talk. But I will say that it was a great game in terms of the intensity. And you could tell both teams wanted it, but it was a chess match. Neither really wanted to kind of just go for it. It almost felt like, okay, let's try and wait for our opportunity. And Cincinnati got it. Cincinnati had their chance. Hmm. When Jack Elliott missed that clearance and it went in behind and Brandon Vasquez got in behind him, used the angle, went low, far post, shot it strong. But Andre Blake was up for the task. And that was one of his weaknesses, Andre Blake, low, far post, hit with power. And then aerial crosses in the past, Andre Blake would have struggled. Not anymore. He's worked on that. You could tell, and he is up for the task. It's going to be very difficult to beat this Union team because even with, you know, you get one or two things to go your way, it's damn near impossible to get it by Andre Blake when he's that in form, when he's that confident, when everything's working for him at the moment. So it's I'd say for Cincinnati, this was all extra credit. This was a step in the right direction, maybe five steps in the right direction, to be honest. They have to be really pleased. That's this is one of those losses where you walk off the pitch with your head high and you're like, we turn things around here. We have a lot to look forward to next year. So I think what Pat Noonan did, what Chris Albright did with recruiting, it's a simple clap. We got into the playoffs. I think we changed the narrative around the club. People are excited to play for the club. People are excited about next year, and the future is bright. So the Union, they took care of a team that really came on strong in the second half of the year. It's all a process, because I don't think anyone doubted them getting to the Eastern Conference Final. All they had to do was win one game and they're in the Eastern Conference Final. But it's winning that game, getting to an MLS Cup, that is the match that they've always had their eye on. And whoever they play, New York City FC or Montreal, both are going to be super difficult. New York City FC is more of the rivalry. We want the revenge. This is what we've been waiting for. We wait a whole year for this, versus a Montreal who, if they beat New York City FC, are coming in with all the confidence in the world. And I think the way they set up might be even that much more difficult for the Union to break down.
Unfinished business is what Jim Curtin called it after this match. Like, this is not it. This is not what what our sights are set on, is another conference final. We want to go to MLS Cup, and look, if LAFC stumble in their conference final, they might be hosting it in Chester. That would be super special. Just one last thing on Cincy here, and Dave just dropped into the chat the T-shirt that Crew fans have made. Let's see, what's it saying? Cincy's first playoff loss, 10-20-22. Crew fans have been awfully
they've been bold.
Chippy. They've been awfully chippy for the way things have gone for their club.
They won MLS Cup 2 years ago, in fairness.
Yeah, maybe we didn't, like, we were talking about the best rivalries in the league. We probably should have given Hell is Real at least a mention there.
It's tough.
Seem to be, you know, Charlie, you mentioned, like, hey, these teams haven't been good enough, and that's certainly true with Cincinnati. But that's changed, and there seems to be real, like, animosity.
Yeah.
Like, there's something real there.
You got to see it. You got to see it grow a little, for sure. On the Philly side of things, can I go?
Yeah.
I think, obviously, the Eastern Conference Final is going to be a tougher game. Montreal and NYCFC are better teams. This was a bogey game, though, for Philly to come out of the bye week, to have to match the energy, and to do it against a Cincinnati team that was, I believe, one of only two the only team in the Eastern Conference they didn't beat at least once this year. And their former coach, who knows how to sort of pull them apart. They've been bad in the matchups against Cincinnati. So this was a weird bogey game. To survive it was all that was necessary for Philly, and to do so without Bedoya was going to be massive. And that's what they did. And I think you saw that in the first half, was I think they sat some numbers in to take away what Cincinnati's done well against them, which is the quick switches to the wing back and then finding the space in the channels. They sat McGlynn and Flock in deeper, and that neutralized it. It also killed their counterattack. But that grew in the second half. And when you look at the goal, it is a segment of play, even though it ends with Gazdag trying to barrel through two guys. The segment of play that gets them there is something they weren't trying or capable of over the last few years. That would have been as quick as they could, ball down the line, and Baizo cross to the far post. And now they can play into feet. Carranza can find Ura. Gazdag's making the runs. McGlynn's an option, pulling a defender as well. And then Flock comes inside. So this team's added to what they do well. I think you saw it out there. And as tough as NYC and Montreal will be, because they're better teams who are better with the ball and they both play wingbacks as well, none of them have two forwards like Brenner and Vasquez, which I thought was the real struggle for Glesnes and Elliott. It's just the 1v1 matchup for 90 minutes against elite center forwards. No other team has that. Maybe Montreal could try it with Kai and Kyoto if he's healthy.
Kyoto is a problem.
I don't think Kyoto's starting a game anymore in this season. It just, he didn't play. Like, it doesn't feel like he's going to be there. So I agree with you, Charlie, but it doesn't feel like that's going to happen.
Wow, that's Mason Toy erasure from you. Didn't even say his name. Draft him for your Golden Boot team.
Yeah, he came off the bench in what, the 88th minute against Orlando?
Yeah, it was a little late.
Do we remember that? Do we remember his chance July 30th when they played at home to the Union? Kyoto goes down the left, cuts it back, and slips this pass across the box to a wide open Mason Toy, no one on him, and he skies it over.
I did not remember that.
I did not either. But you know what?
That is seared into the back of your mind.
One thing I would bet on Charlie remembering, like, until he literally croaks, forwards missing opportunities. Like, I remember when you Yeah, yeah, making sure, both. But I think there's a special place in your brain for the misses as well. Of like, how could you? How could that possibly be? No Ali Bedoya in this match. We talk about the absences for LAFC, but no Bedoya even on the bench. Jim Curtin said afterwards, I'll just say this. I don't think Bedoya will miss it, speaking about the conference final. That's the best way I can put it. So big win without Ali Bedoya.
I think he was in Norway. Swimming in the ice waters there,
trying just to release the muscles. Yeah,
just trying to get the blood pumping in the right direction. Yeah. Let's talk Andre Blake real quick before we sort of turn the page quickly to Montreal NYCFC. We teased it in the beginning. We praised his saves. You know, you've talked about his improvements, Charlie. Evan asks, as the only goalkeeper in MLS history to win the Goalkeeper of the Year award 3 times, is Andre Blake the best to ever do it in this league? If not, what would cement that? And my immediate answer would be MLS Cup, because there are a bunch of other goalkeepers that have won it twice. That's not the end-all be-all, but I think all of those guys have won MLS Cups. You got Pat Onstad, Joe Cannon, Zach Thornton, Donovan Ricketts. I would put Andre Blake ahead of those guys immediately if the Union win MLS Cup. Mm-hmm. And I think he might already be there just on body of work and individual quality.
Yeah, but I think he's above all of those keepers you just named on individual quality for sure.
It feels like he's ahead of the guys with the awards on quality, and he's ahead of the guys on quality that are close to him, like a Tim Howard and a Tony Meola on career, because they didn't have as long of MLS careers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's the combination of the two.
Yeah. Is he a better goalkeeper than Tim Howard in his prime? I mean, you can honestly say no. And that's not a knock on Andre Blake at all.
Friedel as well.
Yeah. But like, you know, MLS goalkeepers? Correct. Yeah, I think he's there. And he's not going to – I don't think he's going to be Nick Raimondo. I could be completely wrong. Maybe he's around for another, like, 10 years or whatever it would take him to get to the Raimondo numbers at the top of the record book. But Raimondo, remember, never won a goalkeeper of the year. Raimondo does have MLS Cups. But I think if you do the quality, trophies, impact on the league, Andre Blake, if he wins an MLS Cup, would be, for me, just – it's unquestionable, put him at the top. Mm-hmm. With all due respect to everybody else. But not to say they're bad goalkeepers. He's just that special.
Didn't Miola won an MLS Cup with Kansas City?
Yeah, he won an MVP award as well, I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure.
So he's the only goalkeeper to win an MVP.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's so crazy in itself.
Yes. That tells you something.
It does tell you something.
So I think in terms of being the clear number one best goalkeeper ever in Major League Soccer, he's still got to put some work in.
All right, let's talk about who could play Philly in Chester on October 30th. So that's right before Halloween. Montreal hosting NYCFC, the early game on Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, ESPN 3. Romel Kyoto, what role will he play? He's training. We've got the imagery to prove it. There's a huge question for me for Tyus Magno, Dave. And I know you've been Team Eber for a long while here, and I think that your loyalty to the Brazilian paid off in round one. Do you think there's any chance Tyus Magno plays? Like, it has been radio silence on his potential status.
Yeah, they sort of made it sound like him and Gray were close for the last game. So you would think a week later that you'd be there, but I don't really know. I don't know what that means. Like, close, lower body. Okay, thank you for giving me 50% to sort of guess from there. And Tavon Gray's upper body. Oh, okay, cool. So now we know the inverse. I think it's safe to say with the pieces they have that he won't be a starter in this game, right? They have Pereira. They have Santi Rodriguez. They have Andrade. They have Eber. I would probably assume that the change from last game would be to insert Keaton Parks and move Maxi higher than it is to bring in Tyus Magno. I don't think he comes on for Eber. I think if he comes on, it's on the wing. And I don't know what you saw from game one of the playoffs, that's a necessity to change.
What do you see when you think of this matchup, Charlie?
I think Keaton Parks is a very important player for this team. I could see him getting more minutes in this game, but probably still not ready to start. I don't think anyone who is coming back from injury will be able to start. In terms of getting significant minutes, Tyus Magno, if he's good to go, they'll give him the time. If especially it depends on the game. It depends what the score is
from the start or just time?
No, no, not from the start. I don't, yeah. I don't think you can play anyone who's been injured and not training properly to start the game. Unless you were Max Morales or Tati Castellanos, if he was still there, you're talking about your best player, then yes, you can make that you can take that risk or take that chance. I think with these players, you just try and integrate them as quick as you can, but you can't give them significant minutes because then you're really taking a risk of them being out completely and maybe potentially out for the next preseason.
And you look at the team, it was really a back five in the last game with Kevin O'Toole as the wing back. So that the winger role doesn't exist right now if you're not playing the 4-2-3-1. And Magno, you're definitely not playing him at wing back. So it just feels like this is a game where you wouldn't risk it. You don't have to. And for NYCFC, they have every ability to go to Montreal and win without him because they're going to play completely different than anyone else does at Montreal. Everyone else sits deep. Montreal struggles to break down a low block, but they haven't seen a lot of teams come in and try and open up a little bit. And I don't think NYCFC is going to press high, but they'll have different triggers. They'll close on the center backs in different ways. They'll make life hard for Montreal in ways that they haven't had to deal with. And NYCFC has played Montreal well. I think they won 4-1 in the first game, which was a long time ago, but they went to Montreal. They actually got a 0-0 tie. It was like the only result that Nick Cushing had got.
They still had Tati Castellanos.
Not in the 0-0 one, though. The 0-0 one was after Tati left, after Dyla left, and it was like the one game they played well under Cushing.
All right, a little bit of a blip there. I don't know what happened. Charlie disappeared, probably had to go sell a piece of art, or I don't know, whatever's going on where you are, Mr. Turtleneck. Okay, let's finish this up with some absolute randomness. Corey Clayton hit us up and said he needs an extra time hot sandwich ranking. I'm guessing this is coming from the Sky Rosa discussion, which, by the way, again, is a Cincinnati Coney on top of a piece of pepperoni pizza, which I guess you would count as a hot sandwich. Corey ranked these hot sandwiches, by the way, Sunday. Two games on ESPN. Check MLSsoccer.com for the listings before we get out of here. He said cheesesteaks are number one. Primanti Bros in Pittsburgh is two. He's fries, slaw, and a sandwich, various meats, etc. Cubans are three. Veal chicken parm, four. Hot dogs, five. He says, yes, those are a sandwich. I have a preliminary list. I know also Charlie often eats hot sandwiches on this very show.
Yes.
So, Charlie, what would be your top... What would be your top hot sandwiches that you would indulge in?
My top hot sandwich is a meatball, hot meatball sandwich.
So meatball
it's
not sub.
It's a sandwich though.
Why?
Not the sub.
Difference.
No, there's a difference. So it's toasted sourdough bread with melted cheese and the meatballs within that sandwich.
Do you cut the meatballs in half to better? Yes.
Yes.
That seems like the right move strategically.
Incredible. And then, you know, I'm all about the veal, chicken parm. It's the veal parm is a top sandwich, but also the buffalo chicken sub is top. So those are my top three.
Are you going like, is that crispy chicken with the buffalo?
Yes.
It needs to have that crunch.
Well, it's got to be, it's got
to
be
fried chicken. You have to have the texture aspect of that.
Yeah. Chicken tender.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good top three. I like that top three. What do you got here for us, Dave?
I mean, it's unquestioned. What stands atop the hot sandwich is the tuna melt. That is the elite warmed up sandwich on the planet.
Oh yeah, I know. God.
Libby doesn't really eat food.
Anything.
Fish, okay. I'm not a big fish.
Like, you're going to throw tuna at me for a hot sandwich?
Tuna melt is the number one sandwich in the world behind caprese, which is not a hot sandwich.
If you love to be tortured, for sure.
Yeah. Canned meat will never go on my hot
sandwich. None of you know what you're talking about. Tuna melt, elite.
Can I get a meatloaf sandwich, please? Good.
I do like a hot open face sandwich growing up. That's what we'd get at delis. But I will say there's a lot of touristy foods that you go and eat and you're like, cheesesteak in Philly hits. That thing delivers.
Slays.
So that's one. And then I went to Montreal this weekend. I ate a smoked meat sandwich. I'm not going to lie. It's not as good as a hot pastrami sandwich from New York. The Bagels aren't either. I think
shots
that's a
fired at Montreal
convo.
Honorary Montrealer, you're testing the limits here.
Those two food things I can't get behind. But I don't mind eating them.
I agree with you on the pastrami being superior, the New York pastrami.
But a Reuben is legit, and I would say the best hot pastrami is Pastrami Queen on the Upper East Side. Shouts to the queen.
I'm not going to lie. I'm disappointed with his top three, but
you don't like his top three. If you had to go the ultimate basic, like this is not going to be my top three, like top of the heap, but given all the different iterations you could roll into, as well as the superiority of the basic, just the straight up grilled cheese is an elite hot sandwich, in my opinion.
I want to chuck a grilled cheese at you for saying that.
I can't believe.
You can do so many different things with grilled cheese.
You don't eat fish,
grilled
so that's what
cheese?
It is. But you
that's
just
your
said,
top sandwich?
You can't have a canned fish.
I said it's not
fish,
my, it's my number one
said,
basic.
Grilled cheese. Okay, get me two crafts out
like,
of the
one. Okay, fine. Okay, let me back it up. That wasn't, I told you that's not my top three.
Give me a warm PB&J.
Nice. All right, PB&J is better on a toasted English muffin. That's how you next level.
I'll take it over a grilled cheese.
Or have you ever done half toasted, half untoasted? A little bit of soft and a little bit of crunch to it. Just
I do like a grilled cheese. I make a good one. I put honey on the outside, so you get a little sweet and salty.
Yeah, but as your number one,
I didn't say it was number one. You're misconstruing my argument. I said it's as a basic sandwich. I think it's underrated. Here's my top three.
No, give me your
as
top
I'm thinking
three.
About it right here. I would say I'm gonna throw Italian beef in here. I've had
that's like Chicago thing.
The Chicago thing, the New Jersey thing.
Everyone, Sam Stasko will tell you, I call it a wet Italian all the time. Because then they, remember we went to
they like dunked the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. What was that place called?
I don't know. I can't remember. In New Jersey.
Fell asleep on the
that's in my top three.
Okay.
Honest, I'm a big beef guy. So a French dip is going to be in here for me as well.
It's a good sandwich. A
lot of, got to have some horseradish on that. But the French dip with the au jus. And I don't know my number one here. I'm debating. I think I'm going to go Sloppy Joe.
Ugh. Wait, that's a canned meat.
He's joking. He's joking.
See, Charlie knew. Charlie didn't fall for it.
Could not believe him. He said Sloppy Joe as a sandwich.
Yeah, I tried. I'm going to throw fried chicken in here as just an elite
sandwich.
But
you have to
hot
no one's going to argue that.
Pick one.
Yeah, so that's I'll throw fried chicken as my number one overall.
Where? What? What's the one?
Yeah, what's in it?
What's the number one?
I'm going to say definitely so a little bit of like cabbage slaw style on here, probably some sort of creaminess as far as like some sort of flavored mayo aioli jam, and then also definitely hot sauce. And we're gonna have pickles.
Sandwich being made.
Pickles have to be on there.
I think it's bun.
I think so too. I was trying to think of the exact style of bun.
Potato bun.
Yeah, potato bun could be good. You could almost go like a Hawaiian roll style as well if you want to be a little sweeter.
Too sweet.
Too sweet for you.
Yeah.
All right. Anders says we can't subject.
Can I just throw out because we will have World Cup during Thanksgiving leftover sandwich, stuffing, cranberry, all that. And then what I was saying when we used to do it in delis, we do hot open. So you get the turkey and then you put the gravy on top and you don't put the bread on. And then you got mashed potatoes and you like have to eat it with a fork and knife, but it's money.
I would also say
that's like a torta ahogado. Tortas are good, by the way.
I do these chicken tikka masala sandwiches.
Okay.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. And on that note, tell us about your favorite hot sandwiches. Anders thinks this is not good content, but I swear to God, this is going to be what we get the most feedback on. Enjoy the Audi 2022 MLS Cup playoffs.
This is great content.
Sunday. Two games. Of course, the early game out east, the late game out west. Copa Tejas, postgame show, MLS channels. Enjoy your week, everybody. Adios.
Much love.
Weekend, I mean.